Welcome everyone to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin, and this week joining me is Liam Lin, who co-hosts the Dragon Quest Slime Time podcast. Liam, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you and I, you let me know that you, like me, love Dragon Quest VI. And there's few of us. I feel like I know like maybe three people who like Dragon Quest VI.
This is a pretty divisive game.
Yeah, but it's always nice to find someone else that likes Dragon Quest VI too. So for today's episode, we decided to chat about why we love Dragon Quest VI, kind of the first that existed in that game for the series and stuff like that. Before we do that, though, since this is the first time you have been on Dragon Quest FM, I do have just a couple of questions for you about kind of your past with the Dragon Quest series.
Sure.
So, Liam, what is your first Dragon Quest game?
My first Dragon Quest game is the first Dragon Warrior for mm-hmm. NES. So I've been playing the series since I was about 10 years old. I first saw Dragon Warrior played at a friend's birthday party in 1989 and really stuck with me. So I picked it up, which was actually kind of stupid because if I had only knew Nintendo Power was going to give it away for free, I could have just waited.
I gotcha. I was actually about to ask that, if it was the Nintendo Power one or if you bought it. That's pretty cool. You might be the first person I know personally who's told me that they actually bought Dragon Warrior. So that's really cool.
Yeah. In retrospect, I wish I could be the one of the people who got it for free, but I actually did buy it.
Yeah, very cool. So what's your favorite, and do you have a least favorite, and why?
There's no bad Dragon Quest game, definitely, but my least favorite would probably have to be 2. And that's just specifically for the NES. It is so brutal when you get to Roan towards the end, the icy kind of like area where you're tracking down Hargon's castle, and then there's just all these monsters with unblockable death spells. And in that version of the game, Kanik's the only one with the revive spell, and he's the first to die typically.
So
I would say just for sheer challenge, that one is the most hair pulling. But my favorite, and it's kind of hard. You got to say 11, just because it is just it's the love letter to the fans. There's everything in that game, and it's so beautifully done and in 3D. But going back to the original series, I'd have to say 4. And that's mainly for characters and music.
Yeah, very cool. That's pretty much would be almost my same exact answer.
I'm saying. I contacted you about 6 because I'm like, I'm listening to the DQFM episodes while I work, and I'm like, oh yeah, that I agree with Austin, like on all these different points. Yeah. So I was like, oh, we got to do a DQ6 episode for sure.
Very cool. And I'm always hesitant to like actually rank every Dragon Quest game. Like I've never done that, and I've done it on purpose because after like, you know, 11 is definitely my favorite. 4 is probably my next favorite. Then 5 and 6, and then, you know, some of the older ones. But like, I can't. It changes, you know, like my opinion on which game is my like least favorite, or which one, like maybe like some days I wake up and I'm like, you know, maybe I like Dragon Quest 7 a little bit better than Dragon Quest 8, or maybe I like Dragon Quest 9 better than Dragon Quest 6. And so it's like, it's always hard for me to like actually rank Dragon Quest games, which is why I've actively never tried, but I can pretty much say that, yeah, 11 and 4 are definitely my top 2 DQ games.
Yeah, I can see that.
So any Dragon Quest games that you'd like to play but haven't yet?
Well, definitely Dragon Quest X, first and foremost. But also Slime Mori Mori 3 and Torneko 3. Excited to see that translation's in progress. Mm-hmm. And DQ5 for PS2 is another one that I have, I haven't played it yet.
I always forget about Dragon Quest V for PS2. Like, not that I forget that it exists, but I forget, like, if, when I'm talking about Dragon Quest games that haven't been localized, mm-hmm. Like, just Dragon Quest V on PS2 never crosses my mind. But yeah, those that's a good one. Those are all really good ones.
Yeah, DQ5 for PS2 just looks really, really good. Just uh-huh. if you look, it just looks like a beautiful version of that game. And it even predates the DS version. Mm-hmm. You don't get Deborah in it, but you do get higher resolution graphics if you want to play a really pretty version of DQ5.
Yeah, and I need to just get a Japanese PS2 because I have the Itadaki Street PS2 game. I have DQ5 PS2, and I have Young Yangus on PS2.
Yeah.
and at some point, just for collector purposes, I know I'll end up buying Tornico 3 on PS2. But like, I need to just bite the bullet and like get a PS2 from Japan and try to play it, even though, you know, it's Japanese and I won't understand a thing. But I mean, I've played Dragon Quest V before, so I think especially that one, I could probably, you know what to do, where to go.
Just do it from memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. I've got Yangus and Young Yangus and DQ5 for PS2, but I don't have a Japanese PS2. So I should definitely pick that up.
So getting into Dragon Quest VI for today's episode. You love Dragon Quest VI. I love Dragon Quest VI. So now let's just get into it. Why we love Dragon Quest VI. Like, is there something, like, first and foremost that you love about DQ6 that just always stands out to you?
Probably character designs and music. Mm-hmm. The character designs are, you know, second to DQ4. This game has some of the most eclectic character designs of the series. Just a ragtag group of people gathering together to save the world. You know?
Do you have a favorite character from Six?
That is a good question. Yeah,
mine's Carver, for example. Yeah, like, thinking about it, I'll go first. Carver is definitely my favorite.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Terry's kind of a brat in the game. He's good, uh-huh. but you get him kind of late, and all yep. your other team members, if you've been job class grinding, are way more jacked. They do that thing where, you know, you fight a guy and he's way harder, and then when he joins you, he's super weak. You know,
yeah.
So, yeah, it's Terry is. Terry's good once you get him up to speed, but yeah, probably the Hassan or Carver character.
So in addition to the characters and everything, you said you like the music as well from Six.
Yeah, probably the first time in the series it feels truly cinematic with these various recurring themes. Uh-huh. You know, you hear that bop, 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 like, and it's just turned into DQ karaoke. But it's you get this kind of feeling like, wow, this could be even almost, if it's like a Disney movie or something, you could feel that kind of cinematic vibe. And even the scenes in the beginning where you're descending on Mudo's castle or Murdaugh's castle mm-hmm. on the dragon, it just feels like you're watching a movie. I know DQ5's music was in an actual movie, but not every track from that soundtrack feels like it fits in a movie and like DQ6 does.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, and I think one thing I really like about 6 is, like, I mean, obviously 7 came along and kind of beat it in scope, but Dragon Quest 6 is just, like, the scope of it is just so massive. Like, there's just so much you can do. And actually, I think I may have mentioned this on an old episode of DQFM, but when I first started playing Dragon Quest VI, I didn't think I was going to like it because of the kind of the earlier, like, linear stuff where it's like before you actually get to Murdaugh the first time, like, actually unlock the job system and everything. Yeah. Like, the first parts of that game, like the first 10, 15 hours, however long it was, I was like, you know, I don't know if I really like this all that much. And then after that, like, loved it, like, just started really playing it, became obsessed with it, and just never really looked back. And so everything after that is just always stuck in my mind as being some of just the best Dragon Quest content out there.
Yeah, I think that's because it's also kind of linear until you get to that point when you mm-hmm. open up, like, the job class and you get the ship and everything. You can travel around a lot more. Once you get that ship, it becomes very non-linear exploration based, and I love that you know this game has a ton of non-linear exploration, which can frustrate a lot of fans. But I think it's just really interesting, and you have to explore. You have to kind of well, first off, you either have to explore a lot, or you have to mm-hmm. play with a guide.
Yeah.
or take a ton of notes.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually, early on in the game, that caught me by surprise is because you go to like the, I can't remember where it is, but you go to the first place and you fall into like the hole into the other world, like very early on in that game.
Yeah.
Like just in like the first like hour, you know? And mm-hmm. whenever I fell through, I was like, oh crap. Like I didn't explore at all. I just went here because I thought it was going to be like a little prologue, you know, kind of thing. And now I'm in this other world already. And like, it really caught me off guard. And yeah. So I can see how people would be thrown off by some of the like non-linear stuff in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I mean, I love exploring in games. Like that's usually the thing that's going to make me love a game the most, is if there's freedom to just kind of, you know, explore, try to grab, you know, all the items, break all the pots, go in every house, that yeah. kind of thing. Like that's definitely the kind of game that I like. So I totally hear you on that.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, when you find certain, you know, like the jail doors, or you find a locked chest and you have to come back to it later, like stuff like that. I don't know that they do locked chests in this one as much as they do it in like 8. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, just like having to remember like, oh, I don't have the final key yet, but there's a locked door here and there's something behind it. So I have to come back later and taking notes on that, or just trying to, you know, as soon as you zoom to every town, once you get that final key and try and find everything.
You kind of touched on this earlier, but we didn't dive deep into it. You mentioned the job system, which is a reason I adore this game, because I mean, I love RPGs with job systems better than RPGs without job systems. Usually, like I really like job class systems in video games. Is that how it is for you too? Like you prefer jobs in games, or you just like sixes?
Yeah, I find the job class system in 3, 6, 7, and 9 to be excellent in their own rights. You know, like in 6 and 7 are very similar. Just 7 has a lot more options with all the monster hearts and everything. But yeah, I think that this appeals to my kind of completionist side, because whenever I play DQ6, I can't just like, oh, you know, Carver's going to be my battle master. Like, you know, I got to job grind every character for every job in the game. That's just something that I like doing in this when I play it, even though it extends, you know, it's very grind heavy, but it, to me, having that job class system and like, you know, counting down the number of battles it takes to get to that next star, and then finding out the areas, because there are level caps in the game where you can't advance your job class, but then there's certain areas where you can grind that don't have that cap, or the cap's like 99 or something like that. So, and finding all those, that little nuance out, and just exploiting it to really, you're grinding, but it doesn't feel like you're grinding as much.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to describe, but
no, I gotcha. So I actually have a question for you that I meant to ask toward the beginning of the episode and totally just missed. So your first time, most people's first time, is probably playing the DS version of DQ6 when it was like officially localized. But you played the fan translation of it first, or was the DS version the first time you played 6?
Actually, the fan translation of the Super Famicom game, I played it in college back in like 2000, which shows you how old I am. It was around that time that I started becoming active in the NX forums, and just based on the news that Dragon Warrior 7 was coming out for PlayStation, I was like, oh, wait a minute, I haven't played 5 and 6 yet. So I joined the NX forums and found out about emulation and fan translations, like all simultaneously, as we say. I found out about all that stuff in just one shot, just from joining the NX forums. and immediately I was like, oh my God, I got to play these games. So
yeah.
I spent my time that I should have been studying in college just playing through GQ 5 and 6 in a row.
Yeah, that's awesome, though. I assumed that that was the case, just kind of, you know, based on talking to you about it and everything, but I meant to ask that early on, totally forgot. So so anything else you really, really love about DQ6?
The slime arena.
Uh-huh.
Just leveling up my slime and battling him, and the fact that they have that little like VIP slime room. That I think is really funny. Like, you have to drop your humans off in the wagon and then just go in as a slime.
Yeah.
Into this little tiny slime door. And then you get like a VIP access to the arena. So that was kind of funny.
You know, my thing with Dragon Quest VI, I know this doesn't necessarily apply to the DS version, but you know, when it originally came out, it cost a whole lot of money. And it's just like, but the game is so full. Like, I feel like, I think at one point on the podcast, I described it as like more bang for your buck, because it's like, yeah, it costs more back the original version did, but it's just like, there's so much content in this game, whether it's like the side content you can do. And the DS version added the, what was it called? Slime curling, right? Is in the,
oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Where you use like the little like touch screen to curl the slimes around.
Yeah,
like,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, like it just, there's even more stuff, you know, in the DS version. So it's like, just like, this game is so full, and I just feel like there's so much to do. And you know, maybe that is why some people don't like it, because like you said, it's nonlinear and there is just so much to do. But I really enjoy it too. So so we're going to be talking about kind of a lot of the firsts that Dragon Quest VI had for the series. But before we do that, about halfway through the show, we like to do a little thing that we like to call shameless self-promotion.
Shameless.
That was good. That was that was very good. We're just gonna
big shoes to fill for BJ.
Yeah, no, I'm just gonna replace BJ. Yeah. You're just gonna do the shameless songs now. That was good.
I hope I could honor his shameless self promotion.
Yeah, no, that was really good. So Liam, since you're the guest on today's show, I'll let you tell everyone where to find you online, all the stuff you do for the community. Just you know, be as shameless as possible. Tell everybody about your stuff.
Okay. Well, alongside past DQ FMM guest PlatyM3, I co-host Dragon's Den's Dragon Quest Slime Time podcast, where each episode features a Dragon Quest fan as a guest speaker. I'm an active member of Dragon's Den's forum and Discord. I'm on Twitter at RealmaCelestrian and at DQ Slime Time. And we also have a DQ Slime Time Instagram, where I post a lot of DQ photos from my time spent in Japan. I was an active member and longtime promoter of Dragon Quest IX's Tag Mode Tuesday at Nintendo New York for local co-op multiplayer meetups. The group doesn't meet all that often nowadays, but if you're in the New York City area and you want some 6 feet distance DQ9 local co-op, I can see about rallying up the regulars and if we can still make that happen. Since we're talking about DQ6, check out the Dragon Quest Slime Time episode 24, where we get in depth with DQ6 Let's Player Fiona de Quester. And then last but definitely not least, thanks to you, Austin, for sitting in on Dragon Quest Slime Time when my daughter was born over the summer last year.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've been on Slime Time, but we've never actually recorded together. I hope you can join us sometime soon for a record.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. That's really cool. So actually hearing you talk about all these things, I actually have another question that wasn't on the notes, but it's a question I asked Platy when he was on here. So you've been a fan since 1989. I mean, and you know, that's longer than a lot of Western Dragon Quest fans. So like, what is it about the series that just has made you like stick it out? I mean, you know, 32 years. I mean, that's, you know, that's a long time to be into the same series. So like, what is it that just keeps you always coming back?
It's definitely the vibe that the series gives off, that, the medieval fantasy. Uh-huh. You know, you look at other series like, you know, Final Fantasy or, you know, there's an element of like future tech or cyberpunk style. Mm-hmm. But DQ always sticks with that medieval fantasy for the most part. You got the Bashmobile and occasional like technology from, you know, I think they're on the moon in Joker 3, you know, so, or mm-hmm. like they're going into space and, you know, stuff like that. But for the most part, it's stuck to that medieval fantasy feel to it. And there's always that feeling of familiarity, but vastly different with every game.
That's a very good answer. I like that answer. So getting back into talking about Dragon Quest VI a little bit more, I don't know that I've mentioned this on the podcast. I know back when, before the podcast started, whenever I was writing a lot more regularly over on my Dragon Quest Austin fan site, like I did a post talking about all the firsts that Dragon Quest VI did, because I was trying to kind of defend it, because I loved it and couldn't figure out why so many people seem to hate on it. And I don't think it's ever been mentioned on the show. So whenever you were like, hey, we should talk about, you know, the first that DQ had for the series, that is like a super interesting topic, I think, because there's just like for historical purposes, I guess, looking at the series, like there's just so much that Dragon Quest VI did first. So I know you've kind of got a list for some of these. So you want to jump right in and talk about the first one?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Ignatius Seven from Dragon's Den and I started putting a list together probably mm-hmm. about 5 or 6 years ago for Dragon Quest mm-hmm. Firsts, like a running mm-hmm. list of first times, you know, some mechanic or game features happened for Dragon Quest, mm-hmm. the franchise. And everything's a work in progress. We invite everyone to hop onto Dragon's Den, tell us what you think we missed, and we can add to that list. The running list we have, I guess, it's the first DQ game to feature animated monster attacks in battle, which is a huge, huge milestone in my opinion.
Yeah, and I did not know that. That was not something that I was aware of. That's really cool.
Yeah, up until that point, it had just been static monsters that just kind of a static image of a monster that flashes when it gets attacked. Mm-hmm. It brings so much life to the battles that basically wasn't there before. And subsequent releases in the main series actually adopt this feature, including the Dragon Quest III Super Famicom re-release, which released about a year after DQ 6 for Super Famicom. But unfortunately, the mobile version or even the Switch versions, for some reason, it was stripped out from the mobile version and every subsequent version after that was based on that. So that's why I still think, like, if you're talking like, What's the best version of DQ3? I still feel it's Super Famicom version.
Yeah, but, I gotcha.
How about you?
So one of mine that I don't see on here is that mini medals, because I love mini medals, and the mini medal rewards stack in Dragon Quest VI for the first time. Like they weren't cumulative until Dragon Quest VI. And again, I guess I should mention for people listening, like a lot of these firsts go back to the original version of the game, the Super Famicom version.
Yeah.
So just kind of throwing that out there. But yeah, the mini metal hunting is like one of my very favorite things in every Dragon Quest game. Like there's just something really nice about finding a mini metal. And I love collecting stuff anyway, both in video games and in the real world. So, you know, mini metals just totally... vibe really well with me. And so the fact that you can actually, like, they're cumulative rewards, I really like. And I know I've heard people say, well, hey, you know, that makes it way too easy to get these things because, you know, they're cumulative now. But I'm just like, you know, I spent all this time, like, breaking these pots, throwing barrels, you know, searching graves. like, you know, I deserve to be rewarded for my efforts, right? So that's one of the things that I really appreciate about DQ6, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I actually like the way that 9 does it too, where you can just collect them indefinitely.
Uh huh.
I think you get a mini medal for every legacy boss. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's the grotto bosses. I don't remember, but you can just find them in the field also. Mm-hmm. There's one spawn spot on the map that you can pick them up on. It's kind of out of the way, but it's doable. And then you get to a certain point where you run out of items that you get cumulatively, and then you can just buy random stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like that aspect of it, because you can easily miss stuff that's on a list, and then you have to kind of go back and find where it is in the game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a pain.
Uh-huh. So what's another one of your firsts that you like?
First game to pause the walking theme during battle. So when a battle starts, the walking theme pauses, and then it uh-huh. unpauses at the conclusion of the battle, which is kind of cool. You don't have to hear the battle. You don't have to hear the walking theme restart continuously.
Yeah, that is really nice. I didn't know about that one either. But that is something very nice. I think it was the vanilla version of Dragon Quest XI, right? That didn't do that, where it like restarted after every single battle. And then they fixed it with 11S, I believe.
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure. Somebody yeah. listening can correct me on this if they want to. But I'm pretty sure that was one of the things that I had to go back and fix with 11S, was that the when they went back and added like the orchestral music and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I think it was that the music just didn't start over every single time you got in a battle.
Yeah. It's a cool feature. I like it.
Another one of mine that is actually on your list too is the bottomless bag.
Oh, yeah. It's
like so nice. Like, of everything that Dragon Quest VI offered for the first time, like, the bottomless bag to me is just one of those things that like really changed the way the whole series works from that point on.
Yeah.
You know, up until that, you had to drop off and take out items from the bank, and just having the bag there is just infinitely more convenient.
yeah. I think there's even something like in the Harry Potter universe that's kind of like that too, where you just have like a bag or something you can put anything into, if I remember that.
You're right. Yeah, Hermione has a bag in the, I think it's the 7th book, when they're, you know, exploring in the woods for like 600 pages. she's got her little bottomless bag with her. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, you can actually rename the bag in Dragon Quest VI, which is also kind of hilarious, because, you know, when you buy items and you have the shopkeeper put them in your bag, he says, there's always room in your bag. But if you rename the bag to something like ass, it becomes, you know, there's always room in your ass.
And so, I don't think I knew that you could rename the bag.
Yeah.
That is hilarious, but like, why? Like, why is that a feature?
I don't know. They decided that was an idea that you know needed to happen.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, that's really funny that you can exploit that in just all kinds of terrible, terrible ways.
I'm sure.
Man, that is hilarious. If I knew that was a feature, I'd forgotten it. But yeah, like, why did they do that? It seems like a weird thing to just include, like, hey, let's let people name their bag.
Yeah. And I don't think I figured that out. I didn't figure that out on my own. I remember just seeing people posting those screenshots.
So another thing, kind of quality of life improvement, I guess, too, was the open function was removed in Dragon Quest VI. So like in the other games, you like walked up to a door and you had to like hit open in the menu and then like go in. But like in VI, the doors opened automatically for you.
That's a good point. I'm going to write that one down. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, unless the door is locked. If the door is locked, you still cannot go through it. But otherwise,
right. Yeah.
There's no open.
For the average door, you just walk straight through.
Yeah, which was pretty cool at the time. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's weird that it didn't exist until VI. Like some of these things that VI introduced, I'm like, it's kind of odd that wasn't a thing already. But
and now, has it been, for the Zenithian Trilogy remakes, did they start doing that?
Yeah, like the DS versions of them, and I assume the mobile versions would be the same way. Yeah, you can just walk in however you want, and the mobile and Switch ports of like the Erdrick trilogy are the same way, where you just walk in all willy nilly now. But
just walk in and start breaking pots.
Yep,
going through people's bedroom dressers and stuff. So this is also the first game to show speed of movement differences, where your characters walk faster in towns and castles and towers and caves, and then slower on the world map, giving you that kind of illusion of distance.
I guess really the only one I can think of, I know you've got some more here, but really the only one I can think of just kind of off the top of my head that you haven't listed to talk about, and you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but 6 is the first one to have truly optional characters, right? Because you have like Amos. I don't know if he's called something else in the like the fan translation, but he's Amos in the DS version.
Yeah, he's Amos in the original too. I think maybe Dragon Quest IV has like Healy, and you don't necessarily have to use him. But yeah.
Oh, no. I didn't realize Healy was missable. Like, so you can play 4 without missing Healy?
Yeah, there's any of the NPCs except for maybe Tomfoolery and what's the dragon, Sparky? And then maybe I forget the angel character's name, but yeah, there's a handful of like any of the characters in Chapter 3 that you can hire, like Laurel and Hardy.
You just don't spend
the money. Or with Healy, I've definitely you can beat it. You can beat the chapter, but you have to load Ragnar up with tons of medical herbs.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. So.
But yeah.
So,
no,
so I guess it's not the first to have an optional character per se, but I guess it might be the first Dragon Quest game that has an optional character that if you recruit them, they stay with you forever.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Definitely. Definitely.
If we're diving into like, I guess, semantics here, and like picking it apart.
I definitely get what you're saying there. Because yeah, he's missable, like Shadow in Final Fantasy VI. You know, he's an optional missable character.
Yeah, he's the Scrimsley Terror is what he's called on the DS version, where you can just like, you can go tell him the truth that he is the Scrimsley Terror, or like hide it from him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's essentially Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
So this was also the first Dragon Quest game to be developed by Heartbeat, who went on to use the same game engine to give us the Dragon Quest III Super Famicom remake. We mentioned the Job Class tiers. I guess it's the first game to feature the tiers, right? Like where you master 2 classes and then you get an advanced class. You can make the argument for the Sage in Dragon Quest III, but that's not like you have to master, I think, Cleric and Priest and Mage. But yeah, maybe that's nitpicking.
You have Thief class on here. That we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
So Dragon Quest VI introduced the Thief class.
Yes, it did. Yep. Yeah, I actually had that as well.
I never thought about that, but yeah, you're totally right, because it's missing in 3.
They added it a year later after the Dragon Quest 3 came out for Super Famicom. They added it, the Thief class, in there.
They added Thief class into 3?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay,
It wasn't in the original.
It wasn't in the original version, though, right?
It wasn't in the original Famicom and.
Okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, it's really cool. That's one of the ones where like I'll just put a thief in my party and then won't class change them, just so that I have a thief the entire game.
That's one of those things too about, you know, talking about Dragon Quest VI first, is that because it didn't officially come out here until, like, what was it, like 2008? I mean, it was a long time, right? Before 6 got here. It's like, it doesn't seem, I feel like a lot of those firsts, like, they didn't pack as much, like, oomph, because people were used to seeing them in other games already. You know, you had Dragon Quest 8 that had already come out.
Yeah.
At this point, you had 4, 5. For DS. Oh, 9 was out by the time 6 was?
It's pretty weird the way that they did, the way that they released it. So leading up to 9's release, we had 4 and 5 for DS come out already. And then you expect 6 would be the next one to come out, but instead they, for whatever reason, they delayed it and put 9 out first. And 9 is just a vastly more advanced game than 6.
Yeah, for real. So that could have hurt it as well.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But I think also that like 6 now had the same game engine that was based off of Dragon Quest 7 for PlayStation that they did the mobile remakes for 4, 5, and 6 were all based on that. So you get a sense that a lot of these firsts are just completely lost if you played the DS version for the first time and just it has that feel of being like Dragon Quest V, but it's not Dragon Quest V.
Yeah.
You know, so we're making these arguments over the DQ first and everything, but a lot of this was taken out or just, you know, it lost the time basically as the remakes were rolled out.
Right. Yeah.
One I just thought of, which is Wells. Is the first time you can go into a well.
Diving down to a well. Yeah.
I remember that because someone recently was playing through Dragon Warrior 4 for NES and was like, why can't I go into this well? And it was just because that didn't happen until DQ6.
Then,
so every subsequent remake had, you can go into wells and find things. And then the Super Famicom version actually had a memory system with a remember and forget spell. So you could actually remember things that the NPCs that you find in towns or castles or abroad have said.
That's right. Yeah. To kind of help you with like figuring out what to do next because the story was so massive.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you either have to take notes or they give you this little thing to kind of take notes in game, which is pretty cool. But I mean, I guess that didn't hold up. Maybe the people and maybe the Japanese fans didn't like it as much, or it didn't make it into the DS remake. But it always intrigued me that it exists. You know, it just reminds us of what a massive game it is.
And yeah, like, for sure.
That you need to have something to help you, or you could easily forget clues of what to do and where to go next.
Yeah. So that about does it for this week's episode. Liam, do you want to remind everybody where they can find you online again?
At Riamu Celestrian and at DQ Slime Time on Twitter and at DQ Slime Time on Instagram or at the Dragon's Den's forums and Discord channel.
Awesome. And remember, if you want to talk to Dragon Quest FM, you can find us on Twitter at Dragon Quest FM and at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. Liam, thanks so much for hanging out with me today. This was a ton of fun. I'm always glad to find other DQ6 lovers out there.
Yeah, thank you so much for spending time talking to me about the game.
For sure. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.